Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, we're live from Turning Point USA's Teenage Student Action Summit with Senator Mike Lee and Congressman Matt Gaetz. And if you haven't done so already, press that subscribe button, give us those 5 stars. Here we go, Charlie Kirk Show. Stay tuned. Summer action continues to heat up in Major League Baseball and big UFC fights or around the corner, the Ultimate Fighting Challenge. And only need 2 weeks away from NFL preseason. Are you serious? We're 2 weeks away, Mr. Producer?
It's amazing.
We're 2 weeks August. Away? Oh my gosh, the best time of the year. I cannot tell you right now, 30 days, 29. I count down the days to college football. NFL is kind of a joke. College football is the bread and butter of our country. College football is the greatest institution. Anyway, we're 2 weeks away from football. I cannot wait. 2 weeks away, 2 weeks away from football. And yes, Tom Brady will win another Super Bowl. So you can go place a bet on that right now. There's only one place that has you covered and one place we trust. BetOnline.ag. It's really important. You want to place a bet? Whether it be the Cubs winning the World Series, Patriots winning the Super Bowl, or the Oregon Ducks winning the National Championship, you heard it here first. You can place a bet on that too right now. Go to BetOnline.ag, sign up today for a free account at BetOnline.ag, and use that promo code PODCAST1 for a 50% welcome bonus. Look, I hear all these smart alecks all the time. Charlie, why are you always saying that the Cubs are winning the World Series? They're not going to win the World Series. You know what I say to them? You sound like a really confident sports analyst. Have you bet on BetOnline.ag since you're so certain that the Cubs are not going to the World Series? Why don't you go put your money where your mouth is at betonline.ag? And they say, well, I'm not that certain. Well, then you have no right to tell me that my Cubs are not going to the World Series. The Patriots won't win the Super Bowl. Ducks will win the national championship. By the way, we are going to do a whole sports podcast soon all about how the Cubs winning the World Series in 2016 was one of the greatest American moments in the last 100 years. We'll do that later. Anyway, don't sit on the sideline anymore. Get in on the action. Don't forget to use that promo code PODCAST1. Or you could text BETNOW to 238669 to receive a 50% welcome bonus. Look, Major League Baseball, it's all heating up. Football is literally around the corner. America is great for a lot of reasons. I think football is one of those reasons. Football is a timeless institution. And if you are not putting your money where your mouth is, I have a word for you. You're a coward. So you need to go do that. Go place a bet right now on betonline.ag. Put your money where your mouth is. You're not a true fan until you're betting. If you believe it, place some money on it. Betonline.ag. All right, we're here on the Charlie Kirk Show with the great Senator Mike Lee. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you, Joe.
And you just addressed our roaring audience at Turning Point USA's Teenage Student Action Summit.
Great crowd. I was so envious of them that something like this didn't exist when I was in high
thank
school.
Thank you.
So they're lucky to have you creating this organization for them to come and celebrate conservatism.
They have incredible passion. And I always find it's the actual younger students that even are the most enthusiastic. I loved your speech for a variety of different reasons. I have to say, just seeing you in the Senate is so promising to me. There's so few members of the U.S. Senate. I think there's like 4 of you that actually understand the Constitution and fight for it. And I'm really happy that you wrote this book, which is more about the Declaration, obviously, but about our founding principles and the fight that we're engaged in. So please tell me a little about the book and why you wrote it.
Yeah, in many ways, they're one and the same. The Constitution and the Declaration go hand in hand. I've written a lot in the past about the Constitution. A few years ago, I decided to write a book about the Declaration because I became convinced that the Constitution is a structure that protects a picture. It's a frame around a picture, but the picture itself is the Declaration. So to truly understand liberty in America, to truly understand why we're our own country, why we broke away from England, and what it is that we need to fight to preserve today, we need to read the Declaration of Independence. We need to understand the circumstances that led to what it says in there and why it is that our list of grievances against King George III, in many respects, still apply toward government today. We should always be wary of those things.
So excessive taxation, control from within, lack of individual sovereignty, these were all outlined in the Declaration.
Yes, yes.
And a recognition of Scottish Enlightenment natural rights.
Yes, exactly. The fact that we exist, the fact that we're worth protecting, that we have rights, is itself a product of the Scottish Enlightenment.
Yes.
And the Declaration contained these three parts. I mean, the first part contained these Scottish Enlightenment-inspired ideals. The second part included an indictment against King George III, all these grievances. And then finally, we declared that we were breaking away from
this. Well, I want to take a moment for the audience, for them to understand, which I know you talk about, how much courage this took for the people that actually wrote this to separate from the imperialist power that was, you know, Britain at the time. How unusual it was, number one. Number two, they were, some would argue, signing their death sentence by signing that piece of paper.
Without question. Without question. They weren't messing around. They were not exaggerating. This was not hyperbolic when they said that they were pledging their lives, their fortune, their fortunes, and their sacred honor.
Yeah.
They literally were committing treason, and they would have been hanged.
Publicly, and their villages, I mean, their villages burned, or their plantations burned, or anything of the, what would happen to traitors.
Absolutely. And one of the things that made these people so heroic, and one of the reasons I was so pleased to write this book, is because many of these people were the same group of people who really had nothing all that significant to gain, but a lot to lose by the United States becoming independent. They were...
Wow. So they had much more to lose than to gain under...
Absolutely.
In liberty.
But they believed in liberty. They believed in the dignity of the human soul.
So here's my question is, what pieces of literature led to their belief? Common Sense by Thomas Paine? I mean, what led to that point? Because I don't think we talk about that enough. And I believe you touch on that as well.
So at the headwaters, you had sort of the Scottish Enlightenment thinkers.
Right, you had Burke, but Smith, sure.
Yeah, exactly. But... they were upstream from where most Americans were. That's where Thomas Paine comes in, because he was a popularizer.
Mm-hmm.
He was able to take these concepts that academics were familiar with, but that the common American English subject was not.
Yes.
And he communicated them in very frank, common language that made sense to them.
And his distribution was through the pamphleteers and through just... publication of magazines, correct?
Yes.
And newspapers. And so in some ways, he was using the lines of communication to sow totally new ideas to a people. Now, do you believe there's an argument to be made that the people of America, because they were rooted in religious freedom for being in America first, to essentially form the colonies that would become America, that they were more ripe for this type of revolution than basically anywhere else under British rule?
Well, I think so. Particularly, which is not to say that every colonist who ever came to America from England was seeking religious freedom, but because many of them had done that, it became a sufficient part of who they were, of who the American colonies were as a collective, that it influenced them. And I think that religious orientation caused them to recognize certain things about their relationship to each other, their relationship to their government, and their relationship to their God. And I think it made them that much more willing to recognize that no government should treat its people the way the Crown and Parliament were treating them.
And you can make the argument, the acceleration for human dignity happened within a couple years, thanks to the actual implementation of the Scottish Enlightenment ideas. And it's one thing to theorize it and to write about it, as you know, the great thinkers did, and then to actually put it into practice, there was no assuredness this was going to work, that people could live free, could live under a citizen government, and could be self-responsible. And so what lessons can we take from the United States Declaration in today's time? Because the subtext to your book is from King George to the deep state today, which obviously shows an arc that the struggle is still going on to present day.
No, that's exactly right. And that's a good part of why I wrote our Lost Declaration, is I want people to recognize that many of the things that we were complaining about, that we were rebelling against at the time of the Revolution, are still things that we should be watchful of and very leery of today. Anytime you have a government that becomes detached from the people and is not elected by the people, isn't accountable to the people, you have a recipe for disaster. You also have that anytime there's too much power that's been concentrated in one place, and where you've got power that's being exercised in a place that is geographically and emotionally detached from the people, bad things are going to happen. That's as true today as it was in 1776.
That's such a great point, that as the Isle of Great Britain was ruling the colonies, you can make the argument the Isle of Washington, D.C. is ruling. It's almost a super government. It's almost become the kingdom of D.C.
That's right. That's right. And even though we don't have a king who sits on a throne and wears a crown, we have federal bureaucracies that regard themselves, that are essentially operating with the type of immunity
ruling
and
class.
Detachment from the people as a despot. So even though it's a collective despotism, it's a despotism nonetheless, and one that we ought to push back against. That's what we call the deep state.
And I make the argument that a lot of the government that's been created today and a lot of the people that are staffing the government think of themselves, to use Plato's term, as philosopher kings, that they believe that they are smarter, better qualified, and they almost want to create the Cass Sunstein model, if you will, where we're going to have a certain number of anointed individuals that know what is best for society, that will be able to program us in a certain way or capacity. What's so important about the Declaration is that there was a rebellion against that. Do you believe that there is a need for almost a new Declaration in today's time? Without the violent means, of course, but a metaphorical one, maybe.
Fortunately, I don't think there's a need for a new Declaration, because the one that we've got, like the Constitution that protects it, is itself sufficient if we will look to it, mm-hmm. if we'll look, understand, and live in freedom. If we'll look to those things, we can reinvigorate those principles into our society. So fortunately, we don't need another revolution, at least in the sense of a violent overthrow. We don't need a war. All we need is to take the existing legal principles that are embedded in our Constitution and that had their seed corn that were originally planted in the Declaration of Independence and start applying them today and realize the extent to which we've deviated from that in certain respects. If we do that, we can get this thing right back on track.
So with your permission, I'm going to play devil's advocate a little bit. And I get this question quite often where I say good things about the Declaration and then good things about the Constitution. And kind of know-it-all college students say, well, Charlie, the Declaration calls indigenous people savages, if something of the sort. I'm sure you're familiar with this. What would be your rebuttal to people listening to this podcast that say, well, Charlie, these are old documents written by racist people in backwards-thinking times?
So glad you asked this. Number one, governments consist of people. People are flawed. They're fallible. Mm-hmm. The fact that there were people who were involved in setting up this government, in drafting this declaration, and in drafting our Constitution, who did bad things, that's a reason to be very distrustful of government. Sure. And so you're actually making the case for conservatism. You're making the case for limited government mm-hmm. as envisioned by the Declaration and the Constitution. Number two, the fact that it's old means nothing. Many of our most fundamental laws are our oldest laws. Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not steal. These are the oldest laws that we have. And yet their oldness doesn't make them irrelevant. Mm-hmm. It makes them important.
And the revisionists, if you will, the deconstructionists, will use these arguments to say it's written in a different time, at a different place, and they'll point to the one paragraph in the Declaration that does talk about the savages or about the indigenous people to try to disqualify the enlightenment of the entire document, which, of course, is a logical fallacy in and of itself. And especially the U.S. Constitution, as I say, was not written for the times. It was written to stand the test of time. That human beings actually act in rather predictable cycles. And the Constitution was supposed to be our greatest hedge against that if we can keep it.
Right.
And so this audience tends to skew younger. What would your charge be to under 20-year-olds of how they can apply the principles of the Declaration in their daily life and their political involvement?
Well, first of all, they've got to read it. And understand what it means. If they want to make the experience of reading it easier and more informative, more fun, they can read our Lost Declaration. There are other books out there. Mine just happens to be the most interesting one, I think. But they do need to read it, and they need to understand what's in it. And then that needs to inform the way they vote, and it also needs to inform the way they interact with people seeking public office. They should be very suspicious of anyone promising to create a sort of heaven on earth, a Garden of Eden-like state,
mm-hmm. utopia,
using
yeah.
government, utopia, Plato's Republic, for example.
I was going to say it, and you said it. That's right.
They should be very suspicious of that.
Yes.
Government is a limited tool. It is a tool that uses force so that we don't kill each other and so that we don't get killed by outside forces. Mm-hmm. But when you boil it all down, government's there to make sure that we don't hurt or kill each other and we don't take each other's stuff.
Yes.
The further afield you get from that, and the more flamboyant and excessive people become in making these outlandish promises about what government can do and how it can reformulate the human heart, the more concerned we should be. Horrible things have happened through government promising too much.
Yes, and the result is inevitable. So the book is called Our Lost Declaration. For our audio listeners on the Charlie Kirk Show, you can go to hopefully any other website except Amazon to buy it, because we don't support Amazon on this program. I'm half kidding. But
they do sell it on Amazon, no, but you can also
know,
buy it elsewhere.
We should hold out the book, but I'm kidding. I just don't like the fact they're trying to get a $10 billion contract with our taxpayer dollars. Besides the point, if you can go to Amazon and buy it too, but it's the Our Loss Declaration. We're so happy to have you on the program. And I just have to kind of add this little editorial note at the end. I don't admire many politicians. In fact, I'm highly critical of almost all of them. But you're in it for the right reasons. Your voting record is sterling, truly. You actually understand the Constitution. I was actually nominated you for the U.S. Supreme Court via Twitter. So if I was in charge, you would have been nominated to the Supreme Court. And I know you come from a great family of jurists and you actually understand the textual roots of our Constitution. And I'm afraid that you're in this too far minority in the U.S. Senate, that I think it's you, Ted Cruz, and Rand Paul that really understand our original roots. But we're so, so thankful you're fighting for our country and for our liberty every single day.
Thank you. Thank you, Charlie. Thanks for all you do.
Of course. Thanks, Senator. Thank you. Wow, wasn't that great with Senator Mike Lee? And if you're interested more about Turning Point USA, go to tpusa.com. And again, leave your reviews, give us those 5-star ratings, and press subscribe. And now, coming up with the one and only Congressman Matt Gaetz. What time is it? Don't look at your phone. You should be looking at your wrist. I am so sick and tired of these young men who think that they don't have to dress up anymore, that they don't have to really own what it means to be a man. You need a good watch. You need a great watch, and you need a Vincero watch. Vincero watches create exceptionally crafted watches and sell them at a very fair price, super competitive. By focusing on meticulous quality control and small batch manufacturing, Vincero has established themselves as the best value in the industry. You're not going to find a better made watch for this good of a price anywhere else. There's a reason why Vincero has over 16,000, that's right, 16,000 5-star reviews, because their bold timepieces masterfully blend form and function into one affordable timepiece. Just for my listeners, if you're listening to this right now, Vincero is offering 15% off your order with code Kirk. Just head to VinceroWatches.com and use the code Kirk for 15% off. For daily wear, special occasions around the office, a classic wristwatch is something every man needs. Vincero's timepieces are bold, uncompromising, showstoppers that can match any outfit with styles ranging from chronos to sports watches. Vincero's has a watch for every style, occasion, and price point. Mr. Producer is wearing one right now. Plus, all straps are interchangeable, giving you more versatility. Change up your watch when you change up your style. Vincero has free worldwide shipping. That's amazing. You could be in Greenland and you could get free worldwide shipping. Vincero has 16,000 5-star reviews, as I mentioned. Whether you're a watch connoisseur or looking for your first timepiece, Vincero watch is going to exceed your expectations and make you feel more confident. All right, so let's just get to the point right now. You need to buy this watch, okay? So do it right now. It's VinceroWatches.com and use the code Kirk for 15% off your order. Use the code Kirk, K-I-R-K, when you check out. Every guy out there, it's VinceroWatches.com, V-I-N-C-E-R-O, V-I-N-C-E-R-O, that's V-I-N-C-E-R-O, watches.com, VinceroWatches.com. 15% off your order. So I'm literally giving you money. Right now, I'm actually giving you money and you get a watch. So you need to go buy it right now in VinceroWatches.com. Use code Kirk, 15% off your order. They have had styles sell out before. So before you do anything else, go pick your up right now. You need to go get this. You will not be disappointed. Don't forget your code Kirk. Guys, be a man. Go buy a watch. Stop with this phone stuff. VinceroWatches.com. Use the code Kirk. What's up, everybody? We are here on the Charlie Kirk Show with the great Congressman Matt Gaetz.
Good to see you, Charlie.
I have to say, you're probably my favorite member of the House. I'm going to get in a lot of trouble for saying that. But not that I think less of anyone else. I just think very highly of what you're doing.
So how do I get invited to one of the Charlie College campus tours then?
Well,
Do you start with your least favorite members?
Well,
do you work your way to your favorite
member? I don't think I've ever done a campus tour with a member of Congress. Actually, no. We had Greg Gianforte come to Montana once. But we're going to University of Florida and consider this an invite.
Well, they will really love me because I'm a conservative and a Seminole. So we may need extra security for that trip.
Well, I think irregardless. So the Mueller report is the Mueller hearing, whatever they call it, is this week.
The Mueller report come to life, the movie version.
Well,
really. If you've read the book, the Democrats hope you'll love the movie.
Sure. I mean, so you're going to be actually on the committee, if I'm not mistaken,
yeah,
right? Asking questions. So give me a preview of what you're going to ask, and then I'll tell you what I think you should ask. I'm kidding.
Cool. Why don't we just start with the lecture?
I
think that we have to expose the origins of this corrupt investigation.
Mm-hmm.
What's so crazy to me is that we know the president was falsely accused of being a Russian agent for more than 2 years. And Democrats think that now we have to launch off into figuring out, well, how did the president react to that false accusation? I
think that most of the American people would be far more interested in why in the hell we had a false investigation to begin with. Why were there these accusations that were baseless, funded by Democrats, soiled by the lies of Russians, and then illegally presented to a secret court? I think that is the line of questioning that will move our country forward the most, because it's the only way we make sure this doesn't happen to another president in the
future. Well, totally. So the questions, and you're right on point, when did Mueller know? When did Mueller know that he had no there was no collusion? I think this is so important, because if he knew before the midterm elections, he was actually doing what his investigation was supposed to be investigating, which was election interference. So you think about it, the Mueller report was supposed to investigate alleged election interference by the Russians, but he himself interfered with the 2018 election by allowing the Mueller report to continue to be hanging over the cloud of the American people.
Like, I'll give this to Robert Mueller. He is the LeBron James of giving 300-word answers that say absolutely nothing. And so it's my expectation that to a question like that, Mueller will give you know, a handful of howdy.
But you're allowed to interrupt them.
Yeah. We do, as members of Congress, control the time. Now it's 5 minutes, so we have to extract
as much truth. You got to be really efficient, right?
And the other thing is that we don't want to have too much recency bias, Charlie. I think that in the scandal of this investigation that we've seen with the corruption of senior people at the FBI,
Peter
Department
Strzok,
of Joe
Smirk, all those guys. Yeah,
but like the American people, I don't know that they follow every single torrid text message, every circumstance where a spouse was hired to shuttle information in.
You mean Nellie Orr?
Yes, to destabilize the president. And so I think that while there's a lot that's come to light lately about the corrupt origins of this investigation, we have to remind the American people that, like, all the cooks in the kitchen here, from the FBI lovebirds to the spouses that had been hired to incorrectly get information to our intelligence community, to attorneys who were hired by Mueller but had expressed their loyalty to the... Well, I mean, we even had one attorney, and this was in the Inspector General's report, who had pledged loyalty to the resistance, and then Mueller hires him. And so I think that laying that bare for the American people provides the rich context that's essential to come to the conclusion that even the most biased group of people that could have been assembled found that there was no criminal conspiracy between the president or his campaign.
No, and in fact, I think it did the exact opposite. Well, it should have. And I guess the other question that I would ask Robert Mueller is, why was his investigation only pointed solely at Donald Trump? Nowhere in the charter of his investigation did it say Trump. It said 2016 Russian election interference. And the original, and I think you voted against the appointment of Robert Mueller, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah,
right?
I was
one
not
of the few.
Supportive.
Yeah, which was an unconstitutional appointment, should never have been funded, had no congressional oversight, with unlimited roaming authority. But why didn't he investigate the fact that Hillary Clinton backchanneled with the Ukrainians? And why didn't he investigate the fact that the Clinton Foundation received hundreds of millions of dollars from foreign actors? I thought it's about election interference, not Russian. Like, I mean, I think there was a Russian pretext, right, but it was foreign interference in general.
But clearly the reason why those elements of Hillary Clinton's interaction with foreign entities wasn't investigated is because you had so many Hillary loyalists that were on the team. Like, what, did you expect Jeannie Rhee, after defending the Clinton Foundation, to go and try to throw the book at Hillary Clinton? Like, did you expect people who were Hillary Clinton and Obama donors to go and fully vet out the facts on those legitimate allegations? They didn't. And so I think we have to show the linkage between the people assembled and their bias and the outcomes and how silly those were.
Well, don't be, I wouldn't be afraid to go after James Comey's role in this entire thing. Jim Comey and John Brennan were the architects behind this entire criminal conspiracy to go after Donald Trump.
It'll be interesting to see whether or not Robert Mueller truly knows when the corrupt effort to destabilize Trump really began. Because I don't think it started in late July when Mueller's report indicates it does. I think that well before then, you had Clapper and Brennan and Comey trying to seed some element of mistrust out there with the American body politic.
Well, so shifting gears a little bit, you just spoke to our Turning Point USA Teenage Student Action Summit.
Yeah.
Pretty enthusiastic crowd.
That is the most enthusiastic crowd I've ever spoken to. But I come from a district that's a little older, so they beat out Wednesday bingo night
at
the old folks' home.
So you're the they buy a lot of golden catheters. Let's just put it
that's
that
right.
way.
So
I think you made a brilliant point that I wish more Republicans would make. And I am, for one, I'm very vocal about this, and I make some allies, but plenty of critics about critiquing our endless wars overseas.
Yeah.
And I'm critical of basically every actor in the Middle East. I think very few of them, if any of them, besides Israel, has our best interest at heart, getting us into these endless wars, playing war games in the region while American lives are being lost. We're $22 trillion in debt. We spend $6 trillion on these reckless wars. We never should have invaded Iraq. What does success look like in Afghanistan? Please comment on it, because I thought you were so spot on.
Well, it's so telling after having just left that room of fired up young people who know no existence outside of the context of a war in Afghanistan.
Endless war.
It has gone on their whole
life.
The
war is older than them.
Right. And I mean, you look at a group of people out there who are trying to win the next generation against China, and you've got, you know, 3.5% of global GDP reflected in the Middle East, and we are just obsessed with this region of the world. You know, China is the growing threat. And what I think we lose is that while we've been toiling away, trading the same villages back and forth with the Taliban, China has been expanding their empire without firing a shot, without engaging in the detrimental activity that, frankly, Republicans and Democrats should
own. And so two things.
Is it generational more than it's partisan, Charlie?
I hope so. Our generation is so sick and tired of these politicians playing war games with our classmates, where they send them overseas to fight for what? I mean, you said it so the best. We're trading villages. What the hell are we doing in the Kandahar Valley? What does that matter? I've never had a senator or a member of Congress, I'm going to have plenty here on the Charlie Kirk Show, tell me why the hell we're in Afghanistan. Well, you know what they say? These platitudes. Well, it's because of American leadership. What the hell does that mean? I mean, I sat down with the senator the other day. I'm not going to say who, former senator, out of respect of confidentiality. He's like, well, America's better when we're leading. How are we leading when we have endless wars in the Middle East? You've heard these platitudes, right?
I have. And the other one that I reject is this notion of, well, like, we have to fight them there so that they don't fight us here.
This is the stupidest idea I've ever heard.
And I'm just thinking, like, so what? Everywhere in the world where there's anti-American sentiment.
So we should invade North Korea, Venezuela, Cuba, Russia, and China before breakfast.
And frankly, there are a few people in this administration who would like to
do that. We're not going to say any names.
Fortunately, President Trump is a realist when it comes to foreign policy. And I think the reason we're not at war right now
is because of President Trump.
Is
Hillary Clinton would have us in a war.
John Kasich would have us in a war.
Totally.
Jeb Bush would have us in a war. I mean, you look at Venezuela, North Korea, and
Russia,
you know, Iran, like those three places. I think if almost any other major candidate had won, we'd be at war in two out of the three.
Sure. And you mentioned in your speech, why the heck are we defending Saudi Arabia's borders with Yemen? Like, yeah. Why is that our fight?
There are some inside the intelligentsia of foreign policy of Washington who have become totally romanticized by these Persian Gulf monarchies. And I'm with you. I think that there are no real white hats in the Middle East outside of Israel. And the fact that we go out there and kind of pick sides and fund both sides of this Sunni-Shia conflict that's gone on for thousands of years does not make our country strong.
I think you're so courageous to say that, because I know it doesn't win you favors in leadership. This is the third rail of American politics.
But I can speak with some authority on this, because I represent the district that has more troops than any other district in Congress.
And they're the ones dying for these stupid wars.
And their family members see the real cost of these wars. It's not just in lost lives. It's interrupted parenting. It's destroyed marriages.
PTSD. Suicide.
Sure.
Opioid addiction.
I mean, I got counselors in every major school in my district that have to deal with the unique challenge and the unique trauma that young people feel when a parent is deployed. And you know, there are times when there is a certain evil that we have to confront with military might. And that's why I'm glad President Trump rebuilt our military.
Of course.
But just because our military is rebuilt doesn't mean we have to deploy them to every corner of the globe.
I think we should be Middle East skeptic. I think we should be Middle East skeptic of the Saudis and the Iranians and all these actors in the Middle East that are continuing to play war games with our money and our time and treasure. And so I applaud you for that tremendously. I know how difficult that is, but I think it's generational. I really do.
Yeah, it is.
I think it's our generation that is going to say no more, because there's kids in there that are 15 years old that have known nothing but America in permanent war and conflict. That great nations do not fight endless wars, as the president would say.
And we need this generation of young people to express their patriotism through military service. And how appealing an offer is that when young people look and see that they're going to be off, you know, defending the Saudi Arabia border with Yemen, or wandering around in the Helmand province of Afghanistan? It's not as appealing as saying, hey, put on the uniform and you're going to fight for our country, for our values, for our citizens, for our security, the things that have always inspired Americans to rise to their highest level of patriotism.
By the way, this is such an opportunity for the conservative movement to win on this issue, to say that we're going to put our nation state first. We would win the support of the American people on this issue alone for the next 40 years. This is a 90% issue. I can say with total authority, people all across, they might be the most liberal person in San Francisco. But they will say, you know what? I might disagree with Matt Gaetz on everything, but at least he wants to end these stupid wars. That we would be rewarded politically for doing this. And it would make us stronger, not the opposite.
But as much as the country isn't eager for a new war under this president. The listeners of the Charlie Kirk Show need to know that there is a strong constituency inside the Beltway of Washington for war. I mean, there are a lot of people.
Explain why that is, because right. I have my theories.
Well, you know, over at the Pentagon, anybody who's a colonel is going to probably end up as a general if they're going to, if we go to a war. You know, if they're going to, if they go from maybe a 1-star to a 3-star. And then also, war means billions of dollars of unaccounted
for. The war machine, as yeah, Eisenhower warned us against.
And with this new dynamic we're in, where when we spend more on the military, we have to spend more on domestic, even like just pro-spending domestic lobbyists want war because they know that it ushers in an era of less accountability.
This is so. So what you're saying is that there are people within Washington, D.C., this is really important, that are so self-interested that they would rather see thousands of Americans die so that they can see their own profits increase.
Well, and that's what I resent, because it's my neighbors. It's the people I love and who I've grown up with my whole life. You know, and the fact that we don't send the dregs of our country to go fight these wars. We send the best we got. And when I go see him at Walter Reed, when I see him come back broken on the mm-hmm. inside and out, it breaks my heart to think that their patriotism and their dedication is not matched by the dedication of people who serve in Congress, who should be taking votes one way or the other. You know, we've got legislation that's currently pending in conference between the House and the Senate on whether or not the Congress has to vote for or against these wars. And to all the war hawks in my party, in Congress, if they think the case for war is so good, they should have the guts to step to the floor, put the articles on the desk, and vote one way or the other. We should all have to take a vote on these things,
yes.
Every damn one
yes.
of us.
And we should have, every year we should have to vote on whether the Afghanistan war should be continued. Now, they get around it because they don't call it a war. It's not an official declaration of war. There's only been 5 official declarations
right.
of war.
Yeah, it's not a war. It's just been going on.
And we've only lost thousands of
you know,
people.
All these people have been alive that we just saw. I mean, it's a ludicrous distinction, and I think it erodes our Constitution. We
absolutely.
Have to stand our
It is totally unconstitutional. The War Powers Act is very specific of what the executive branch and the military branch is able to do, and we are violating that because there's a war-happy bipartisan cartel that wants to see themselves get rich, see themselves get more important, as you see, and they don't care about middle Americans. It is middle-class Americans that are going to fight these wars. Mm-hmm. And you know what? There's contempt for them in this community, in this Washington, D.C. community. Because, oh, they didn't go to the right schools, or they actually look down at these people.
It's really sad because, you know, people should be able to look to the Capitol as a place where folks are fighting for their interests.
And that's not the case. And, well, you're doing it.
Well, too often we got people in Congress who do get kind of wrapped up and staring at their own nameplate. And the one thing that gives us more opportunity mm-hmm. than anything we may see in our lifetimes is the Donald Trump presidency.
Totally.
Because the rule book is thrown out.
It's the one window to realism.
Like this whole BS Washington rule book is out the window. We now have an opportunity to make common sense arguments to someone who is not
yes.
bought and paid for by the special interests of the lobbyists, and we can move this country forward. And my belief is that if we reelect this president, and if we keep the momentum going for another 4 years, even when Trump
totally
is gone,
agree.
They won't be able to change back what we will have done to advance the cause for our country.
I totally and completely agree. And I mean, I believe that we need our own, the Green New Deal is so stupid, but we need an equivalent of an anti-corruption, pro-worker, pro-citizen compact
yeah.
that we can sell to the American people that has lobbying reform, that has term limits, that has campaign finance reform.
By the way, I would take support from the left. If there are people on the political left who support term limits, who support lobbyist reform.
We should have a pledge similar to
yeah.
how AOC's running around getting people to sign the Green New Deal. We should have a pledge that says term. There's some generational issues. There are people that have served in Washington, D.C. twice as long as some of our attendees have been alive. Think about that. What have they done for our country?
Well, and there's just no way to be in this place for decades and not lose some contact with
That's
reality.
That's exactly
I mean,
right.
This is a town surrounded on all sides by reality, you know, but it is absent in many of the discussions that occur here.
Yeah.
So I think that, like, if there were only two things I could do for this country to save it for the next generation, it'd be term limits and a balanced budget amendment.
I totally agree.
We do those two things, everything else will fall
Well, and with no exceptions on the balanced budget amendment, because they say, oh, we already have a balanced budget amendment, but we find exceptions every single year to raise the debt ceiling, so on and so forth. Anything else you wanted to mention, Congressman, like things you're working on or initiatives you're focused on?
Yeah, you mentioned the Green New Deal. I've got a response to that, the Green Real Deal. I'd love folks to check it out. I think that the environment, the planet, these are really important priorities for us, but we do not have to buy into the left's purported solution set to care about making the earth a better place. And so if folks will check out the Green Real Deal,
well,
we're leaning into innovation as the strategy, not regulation.
I've been following that, and I have to say, for the listeners of our show, students care way more about the environment than any other mm-hmm. or any other demographic, and Republicans at their own peril just totally ignore it and mock it. And again, the Green New Deal should be mocked because it's the stupidest thing.
But we should be for stuff.
But of course, but we should have solutions.
Right.
And since when, I mean, should we just be the angry old people that say no to everything and then go declare war on another sovereign country? Or should we be a party that says, here's a problem, here's a solution, here's a problem, here's a solution, here's a problem, here's a solution. People will reward people that put forth solutions. And look, there's something to be said about, we're conservatives, so based on the word conservative, is to conserve things you care about. Conserve the country, conserve the Constitution, the pledge, the flag, and our rivers and our natural resources, our lakes and our mountains.
What could, you know, the left tries to attack us for being nationalists, which to me, being a nationalist just means you love your country.
I love the Rocky Mountains.
Right. So why would, I mean, to me, protecting our environment is one of the most nationalist things we can
do. Yes. I mean, we should, again, this is a total recalibration away from what I believe was the Republican viewpoint of the last 20 years, which was corporate interests first.
Yeah.
And to be honest, like, we should continue to preserve our natural parks and our lands. Do it in an entrepreneurial, pro-business way. But this idea that we should just dismiss the topic of the environment, which a lot of Republicans do, I think is so foolish.
Well, we're not going to do that in Florida. We got a great green Republican governor, my friend Ron DeSantis.
He's fantastic.
And we're making sure that we protect the environment.
You and I both supported Ron.
For great new Floridians like you, Charlie.
Well, I am. We're so excited.
850 people a day moved to Florida. And on one of those days, it was you.
I am a Florida resident. I'm proud of it. I'm now going to pay 0% income tax for the rest of my life. And I'm just thrilled.
Well, I will give you a quick crash course on being a Floridian. Our state bird is the mosquito. And our state sport is shuffleboard. So I hope you get very used
That's
to
good.
That.
And the state show is EWTN. So I'm kidding. So for those of you that don't understand, it go way over your head. It's a Catholic show. Anyway, anything else you wanted to mention?
No, man. Just hope you enjoy the Sunshine State.
We're going to very much. And just final thing, we need more of you. You are in the vast minority of the minority in Congress. We've got 535 people in Congress, and there's probably 20 that I really respect, I believe, doing the right thing. I mean, you, Jim Jordan, Mark Meadows. All right, everybody, this was fun. Congressman, keep fighting. Congressman Matt Gaetz from Florida. Thank you. What an amazing opportunity to sit down with Senator Mike Lee, who fights for liberty and the Constitution every single day, and also with Congressman Matt Gaetz, who I believe is a new generation conservative Republican who has a unique take on the issues and has tons of courage. And we were here at Turning Point USA's Teenage Student Action Summit. We heard from the President of the United States and many other speakers. And again, we encourage you to get involved at Turning Point USA, tpusa.com. That's tpusa.com. Press that subscribe button. Find one other person to listen to the Charlie Kirk Show. Leave those reviews. Helps us climb in the charts like you wouldn't believe, and support our sponsors. Hit that subscribe button. Again, tpusa.com. Thank you guys so much. Until next time, with our exclusive interview with Jared Kushner, we'll be back on the Charlie Kirk Show.
Hey, everybody, it's Laura Ingraham, and I'd like to invite you to check out my new show, The Laura Ingraham Podcast, exclusively on Podcast One. So join me 3 days a week as I cover politics, the culture, everything in between, laugh, learn, all at the same time. We got you locked and loaded, and you'll be ready for the week, ready for the month. And it's very easy. You just subscribe today, download new episodes exclusively at podcastone.com or wherever you find your favorite podcast. And you know mine's going to be one of your newest.